Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST. Code ACAST.
Welcome to another episode of the Self-Build Plus podcast, where we chat with self-builders, suppliers, and experts about all things home building and renovating in Ireland on both sides of the border. I'm Astrid Matson, your host and the editor of Self-Build magazine.
This episode was recorded at Self-Build Live Belfast in October 2023.
We are going to be talking about what to look out for when you're self-building, a lot of pitfalls to avoid. And we have Pete Cole here from Pete Cole Consulting. He specializes in defects and projects, but also he's also a clerk of works. So he has a lot of experience supervising self-build projects. So the day-to-day pitfalls on site, Pete, can you give us a common scenario of what can go wrong on site?
I've listed five pitfalls.
Yeah, five pitfalls.
I could give you 550 if you want. But
we'll try to be concise.
The bitterness of poor quality remains long after the sweetness of low price is forgotten. And this is a really important phrase, I think, that should be remembered during construction projects.
So cheap always costs a lot, basically.
Cheap is often expensive.
Cheap is expensive, yeah.
Everybody wants to save money. Everybody has a budget. I absolutely get that. But you have to be very careful where you're going to save money. The money has to be spent wisely and in the correct places. In my days as a principal contractor, you would very often have a potential client turning up in a 50 grand car and they want the 50 grand kitchen. And then when it gets to the building, the bit that's going to keep you warm, keep the heat in, keep the rain out, stay structurally sound for a very long time, they're looking for the cheapest builder. It really doesn't make any sense. The car and the kitchen are consumables. They're not going to be there for the lifetime of the building. They might be very Instagrammable at the time, but it's more important to get the fundamental parts of the building right. Money being spent in the right areas and wisely, for example, superstructure, robust details, insulation, any tanking if the building is in any way subterranean. Making sure the excitement of the build doesn't get lost in Instagram and all of the shiny bits that we all love and are all an important part of the build. But we've got to keep the wind and the rain and the water out and make the building stand up for a long time. I've never seen a difficult tanking detail or drip detail or insulation detail on Instagram. It's always the shiny bits. Shiny bits are not the fundamental of the build.
So that's the first major one. So to really focus on the structure of the building, making sure you have quality control and you have a good builder. Not go for the cheapest quote.
Definitely.
Okay.
So the next one I'm going to talk about is the P word, procurement. Procurement is the art of obtaining something. you're going to procure your new home, and you're probably going to do it by the self-built method, it is still the biggest purchase you're ever likely to make in your life. It's not a short-term thing. It has to last for many years. When it's finished and it has achieved building control completion, this house has to be, no matter what your funding route is, the house still has to be mortgageable and sellable at the end. Because if it's not mortgageable and sellable, it's not a tangible asset. That's really important. You get one chance at it. If it goes wrong, it usually ends up the money that you wanted to spend on the shiny kitchen will be spent on solicitors, barristers, and experts. And as someone who works in that area, I cannot stress enough how difficult and anxious that can be for the person on the receiving end of that. It's very, very advisable to try and avoid all of that through good procurement. Not using the cheapest builder. Look at the track record and history of your builder. Do a lot of research. Look at reviews. Look at their viability. Look at how long they've been around. All of those things are really important factors when you're making this huge decision about who's going to build your new home. If the project is not well managed, and disputes start to happen early on, you will find money will disappear like snow off a ditch. A good example would be falling out with a squad of bricklayers, maybe six course of block past the substructure, and they're away. You go and try and get another set of bricklayers to come and finish that off. The rates will have doubled, and they won't be that interested. Now, at the minute, the trades are not as busy as they were. There's been a bit of a downturn, but the minute things get busy again, the trades, unfortunately, a lot of them can name their prices, and that leaves you at an extreme disadvantage. I talked on Friday about architectural appointments. It's important that you have a properly appointed and instructed architect to administer the contract and see the project right through. I'm not an advocate of the sort of direct labour route at all, because you as a consumer have no protections. If it goes wrong, you probably have nowhere to go. And there's nothing more likely for a mediator or a judge to point out if it all goes wrong is how bad your contract is. Okay, so a strong recognised method of contract, for example, a JCT minor works contract, that is your ultimate protection. Because, as I keep saying, you've got one go at this. You've probably got one set of money, one set of funding to do it. And if you have to go back to it, it gets quite nasty and quite difficult. A properly run contract will make your build much more enjoyable. Monthly site meetings are the forum for dealing with any issues and any problems. Formally minuted site meetings, and it just keeps the smooth running of the contract much more possible. And it's a great forum for dealing with any issues. And as you go through the build, there will be lots of discussion about different choices. There'll be finishes choices, there'll be window choices, all of these things. And no matter how much you have researched and decided what you think you're going to use to build this, there will be changes. We'll run into all sorts of problems with supply chain, availability, all of these things come about, and there's always the requirement for more changes and more considerations to be given.
Yeah, okay. Go ahead. So another one.
Ground conditions. Ensure that if required, there's an adequate geotechnical survey and survey of existing services, particularly if it's a brownfield site or a site in an urban area where there is the high likelihood of utilities either running through your site or adjacent to the boundary of the site. Remember, if we're excavating for foundations and we're very close to utilities, that has to be considered from a health and safety standpoint, but also from a cost standpoint, because if you put a digger bucket through one of NIE's cables and cause an outage, or even worse, a fibre optic broadband cable, they will not miss and hit the wall with charging you. So that's something to consider. Ground conditions, what's under the ground? Is there contaminated land? Another very expensive thing to fix. Has there been any oil spill? All of these things are expensive, so the cost of a geotechnical survey might be relatively small. Even if you're in the process of buying a site, nobody wants to buy a site that needs thousands of pounds worth of remediation before you can even build a foundation. So can't recommend that enough. If the any of the boundary walls of the building or boundary walls of the actual driveway are adjacent to public highways or footways, there's a thing called task approval required. Depending on the difference in ground levels, that can be also be very expensive. And you need to just think about that, particularly if you're going to buy a site. Any overhead infrastructure as well. You might have an overhead power cable or something. If that needs moved or if it needs altered, it will be expensive. And I did mention the other day about getting your sort of developer inquiries for all of your infrastructure, broadband, NIE, water, sewage. If you can't get a sewage connection, you're going to have a treatment plant, which will require consent to discharge. That's another separate application. The viability of that can sometimes be expensive. And I'll give you another good example from my days as a contractor, where we knocked down a bungalow to build two houses on the site. And at a site meeting one day, the developer said, "This is great. We've got an NIE cable onto the site, and we'll have electric here. NIE have a standing charge for an electric connection." That was fine. So we did our developer inquiries to find out that the NIE connection, that cable, only was adequate to run one house, and we were building two houses. So the cable that we needed to connect to was on the other side of the road, and the site was on a T-junction. So we needed considerable increase in costs, not least the three-way traffic management that was required to excavate and do the road crossing. These are things that people don't think about and people don't see. So I can't emphasize enough about those developer inquiries, your services, your infrastructure. You will need all of those. Another one, variations to design without drawings or statutory approvals being updated. Good example would be a complex roof makeup, where the design is there and there's maybe a problem. There's very often a supply problem with a particular product, or there's a cost saving to be had. I can't emphasize enough, if you're going to change anything in a system makeup, like for example, a pitched warm roof, what can happen is you could maybe have someone who provides one of these components coming along and giving you all of the technical justifications and the U-values, and that's wonderful. You've got this product that will do your job and it's cheaper. But what nobody has considered is the other three or four products that are part of the system makeup, and there might be some sort of change in relation to condensation management, condensation risk analysis. And if you plow on site and this doesn't go back needs to go back to building control to have any statutory approval amended, because you've amended the build. But more importantly, it needs to go back to your architect, because if you've changed one component, or the builder has changed one component in a system makeup, there may be very significant issues that will come about sometimes years later, when you should be enjoying your new home, and all of a sudden there's a £50,000 problem because somebody saved a few quid on insulation on a particular day.
Changing the specification of that was put in place.
You've got to be so careful. And when you look at a system makeup that might have four or five suppliers of the different products, you can be sure that all of those products in their own way will be good, they'll be compliant, and they'll meet most of the criteria and design intent that you're looking for. But it's when you put them all together as a complete system, you may have inadvertently changed something. So that always, if you're going to change something, get it back to the architect. Get them to do the condensation risk analysis in the example of a roof, and make sure you haven't inadvertently saved yourself an incredibly small amount of money to find out in 3 or 4 years' time you've got a £50,000 problem.
Because the builders have a tendency to use systems they're used to, or find a supplier that
I've been doing
they
that
have
this
good relations with and cheaper product for. And they'll tell you, sure, this is actually better, you should put this in.
The biggest problem you'll get is I've been doing it this way for 40 years. But in the last 40 years, carbon has become a problem. Building technology has drastically increased. And the skills and the available trades on site, unfortunately. And I'm in this industry 25 years next February. The people that are available to us to do the work, there's less and less of them. So if you put those two lines together on a graph, we have a bit of a problem. We've got less people to do the work, and we've got massive changes to technology. And I'll give you another thing I've learned just being at this show. Talked to a couple of different people, and I have a particular interest in pitched warm roofs. One of the next problems we're going to have with pitched warm roofs is probably condensation with solar panels, because we're all putting solar panels on our roofs because we want to help with carbon and we want to save money on electricity. But what is happening with any condensation that's coming through an air-open membrane? If it's coming through on the back of a rugged slate or a concrete tile, it can ventilate. But if we've got a solid solar panel, so there's another change to something. Solar panels are a great idea. Pitched warm roofs are a great idea. But again, we change one single thing, one component, and all hell can break loose. So that's something I'm going to now go down a rabbit hole with and learn more about.
So warm roof is basically insulated at the pitch level.
In the pitch.
As opposed to the
cold floor. Roof would be a typical house where the wool insulation is above the ceiling. And then a pitched warm roof would be, if you imagine a one-story and a half or a two-story-and-a-half house, when basically the second floor is into the rake of the roof. That type of roof construction is absolutely superb if it's done well. I'm coming across an awful lot of it where components, certain materials have been changed or altered, and it's problematic. So you've got to be so careful with that. And years ago, interstitial condensation wasn't really a huge problem. What has changed is buildings are now more airtight and they're now more thermally efficient. So areas where we get moisture build up, moisture collecting, is when it happens quite badly. Can't say enough about making sure a pitched warm roof makeup is designed and checked. And if you're going to change anything, let the designer decide. The builder is not qualified in design. The builder won't have any PI insurance for design. So get it back to the designer to protect yourself.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Next one. Next horror story.
last but not least, not having all of the all aspects and elements of the work going through the principal contractor. It's a real common perception out there. You know, I've got my kitchen organized. I know what tiles I'm using, and that's great. But when you enter into a building contract and you have a contract, you have your principal designer or architect appointed, you have your principal contractor or contractor appointed, you must have a robust method of facilitating these works. So I'm going to talk about the JCT contractor. The contract is there to facilitate the contract between the two parties, and it offers protections, boundaries, and it includes dispute resolution mechanisms, protects both parties. Have monthly site meetings. Make sure...
Pete, just one sec. For the JCT contract, that is kind of the standard
that you would sign with.
And where does it come from? It's from an association.
It comes from a body called the Joint Contracts Tribunal. Now, more modern forms of contract for a lot of public sector works now are the NEC contract, which is an engineering contract, which seems to be the current model. For domestic house building, JCT is the best route to go.
Okay.
Now, to go back to another analogy for you, I'm talking about not having all aspects of the work going through the main contractor, the principal contractor. If you employed a tiler and a shower door fitter and a plumber to refurbish your shower, and 3 months later it was leaking, who would you phone? Who would be responsible? You'll have them all pointing the fingers at each other. And to take a shower out and redo it, it could cost you a couple of grand. That's before you get to any consequential loss or damage, decor in the lounge below or whatever. Similar thing if you get your own bricklayer and then you get your own groundworks contractor and there's a problem with a damp-proofing detail and the bricklayer blames the groundworks contractor and the groundworks contractor blames the bricklayer and you've nowhere to go. Your liability has not been protected. You've no consumer protection. So this is why I always lean towards the contract and having everything going through the principal contractor. A good principal contractor will like to do this. They will be expected to get profit. They have to get profit on everything because they're responsible for it. And again, sometimes the average client gets really upset about this. And I'll give you another example. I'm the principal contractor and there's a £40,000 kitchen being installed. So from the day I take possession of the site's under my custody and control. I have to insure it. I'm liable if anyone breaks in and gets injured. The kitchen arrives on site. I'm responsible for that kitchen until the day of handover. If it gets scraped, gets damaged, gets stolen, gets burnt, you're going to come to me and ask me to replace it. I need profit for that because there's risk. If you have a main contractor who is not getting any money for the kitchen, the tiles, all of those things, there's a cost element for a main contractor, a principal contractor, to run all of those aspects of the contract, and there's a risk element. And if they're not getting any money for it, it might seem like a saving, but it's not, because when you're busy at your day job and the kitchen fitter arrives and the sockets and the pipes are all in the wrong place and he rings you up and tells you, my kitchen fitter's here and he's on a price and I'm going to have to charge him out today and we're going to have to come back in 2 weeks when you've all this fixed and then you've lost your program date, the whole thing becomes incredibly fraught and more likely to end up in a dispute. You actually want the principal contractor and the kitchen provider to be working in complete synergy with each other for you, the client, for the greater good. And you want the project to be finished with everything resolved. And if there is a problem, you go and contact your main contractor because he's the person that's got profit on everything. He's the person that's contractually responsible and he's your one-stop shop. So that's your consumer protection through the contract. You don't have the main contractor saying, we didn't get any money at the kitchen and we didn't get any money at those tiles and that shower's leaking. That model just does not work. It's hard enough when the model is correctly put together if there are issues. So everything should go through the contract and there should be one point of contact really for all of those things. When you get to the end of a JCT contract, at every payment stage there will be, when the house is finished, 5% of the contract value will be retained by you. On the day of practical completion, at every payment stage, 5% of the money is held back. When you get to the completion date and the day of what's deemed practical completion, and the architect will issue a certificate to say the building is practically complete, and at that point you should also have a final building control certificate. At that point, 2.5% of the 5% of the retention is released by you to the builder. And then, depending on the type of job, typically with a new build it would be 1 year. And the reason 1 year is advisable is you want to see how your house is going to perform through a complete set of seasons. Your house might hand over in the summer and it's sunny. I know it wasn't particularly sunny this summer, but you need to know what that building's going to do in the depths of winter. You want to know what that building's going to do in a storm. Are there any rattles or noises? Is the roof properly fixed? So a full year is very good. We get to the end of the full year. Any snags, defects or issues are raised formally through the contract to the architect, who is also the contract administrator. And that is the opportunity, really, for the builder to get his hands on the last 2.5%. And what a good builder will do is we'll meet up with the architect and client and go through any issues that have been raised, make an arrangement to come back and fix them, and then the architect will come back, and once everything has been satisfactorily dealt with, a contractual document called a making goods defect certificate is released, and that then obliges you, the client, to release the last 2.5% to the builder. And also within that contract, you have the option of there's a latent defect provision up to 6 years, which you're protected with under the contract. A latent defect is typically something significantly bad that happens. I don't mean a small crack in a wall or a tile falling off. You know, that is dealt with under the making goods defects part of the contract. But I can't emphasize enough, everything I talked about today, and I talked about it many times in my career as a contractor to potential clients, and some of them rolled their eyes and some of them really got what I said and followed my advice. And this is not embarking on a self-build. It's not a small amount of money. It's not a light-hearted task you're going to do on a Sunday afternoon. This is something that's probably going to affect you for a large part of the rest of your life. It's not something should be taken lightly. And you've got to protect yourself, and you've got to put all the mechanisms in place that if something does go wrong, you're as protected as you can possibly be. When the money is spent on a construction project, people usually have a funding source. Not everybody has a further funding source for to deal with anything that's gone wrong. And particularly when people are interested in talking about budgets for self-build, one of the most important aspects of managing the budget is to make sure that you have a sound contractual arrangement with a good builder and a good architect, and you want to have good relationships and the good running of the project. And if you can get to the end and you're in a position to go and put a Google review up for the builder, and then the builder gets recommended somebody else, that's great. Another thing to think about is when you embark on a self-build project, you have a set of relationships that develop, and those relationships are there through the duration of the build and for the year afterwards for the maintenance period. So there's a bit of a managing relationships aspect to it as well for everybody involved.
But Pete, a lot of people would have relations, friends, family who might be in the trade. Let's say your brother's a tiler, your cousin's a plumber. So oftentimes you do go direct labor because there is a cost saving and you can trust the people that you're going to give these jobs out to. So in that instance, would a warranty be enough to try to cover any blaming the other person if something goes wrong kind of thing?
I think if you go down that route, you as I said earlier, you could have a good digger driver and ground worker who put in your substructure, and you could have good bricklayers, but it's all the wee bits in between. It's all the bits of the building project that aren't quite a trade. They're more of a friendly tap on the shoulder at the right time during the project. Maybe the role for a clerk of works. You can line every trade up. The bit that the principal contractor does is all the little bits in between. Bits that there won't be a stand for here today. You know,
yeah.
Making sure the lateral restraint details are in properly. Making sure any damp proofing or soundproofing is done correctly. Any small structural and intricate robust details. Those details are becoming more and more important, particularly with air tightness and energy efficiency.
And condensation, yeah.
Condensation.
Yeah, yeah. Any questions, guys? Yep.
Thank you. Sorry to go off on a bit of a tangent, but is there any common pitfalls for wood-framed cabins or wooden structures that are different than the five that you've already listed?
Interesting point. I was talking to someone about this yesterday. Obviously, modular is what we call an MMC, a modern method of construction, and it's primarily come about through the housing crisis, the housing shortage, ways of constructing buildings more quickly. One of the pitfalls I see with some of the modular stuff, I've actually been a clerk of works on a school in England, and it was manufactured here, and I did a set of inspections on the modules. And that is fine, because that will all be subject to building regulation and proper design. When we get into the sort of slightly away from something like that, the more sort of glamping type things and all of those, I'm not quite sure how those are regulated. And I'm not sure if any of them require any sort of building control design or statutory approvals. And I think there's something there that has to be teased out. I'm not saying they're all bad, by the way, because some of them are fantastic. But I think the way design and the construction and the makeups of them are regulated may be questionable in some instances. And again, I don't say that as a general sweeping statement and apply it to everybody, because I'm sure some of them are doing it very well. But that's something that hasn't really been... It's a relatively new thing. And in fact, I read an article in the newspaper recently that there might actually be a downturn now in this whole modular cabin thing. It was incredibly popular, and I think the lockdown brought it on a lot, because people wanted to be able to have their own working from home space in their garden and stuff. So I don't know much more about it than that, other than just to keep an eye on the newspapers and the social channels and see what happens.
Yeah, make sure it's building regulations compliant if you're going to be living in it. Yeah, not like a home office in the back garden.
Thank you. Just to sort of build on a question that Astrid had asked earlier, if we do have someone, say, for example, in our own situation, we might have a family member that's willing to help with groundworks.
Sure.
Or that, are contractors still comfortable coming into situations like that where there has been, say, for example, groundworks already performed and then they're coming in at a later stage, or working alongside people that's not necessarily someone that they've organised? And how does that then impact upon contractual?
I hear you, and I get what you're saying, and you may find that some principal contractors may be willing to accept that. It could be written into the contract as a provision, so that it would be called prior works, which means the principal contractor wouldn't be responsible for it. For example, if you had a family friend or colleague who did the substructure work, and they might be able to do it for a more competitive price. But I think that the most important thing, and to say nothing contractual at this point, the most important thing really would be to make sure you have a good relationship and a good level of synergy between the two parties. You want them to work together. You don't want the principal contractor to turn up to a substructure that's been left with bits of broken block everywhere and bits of the site that you can't even walk around because there's holes. I mean, it's having... There's nothing will annoy a trade or a builder more than not having things reasonably well organised for them. So I'm not saying what you've suggested is a bad idea. If you can contractually deal with it by having it written in as prior works and make the other party responsible for it, make sure that if your substructure is being built at a time when the principal contractor is not in charge of the site, that site is actually under either your custody and control or the custody and control of the contractor. You've got to think about CDM regulations, welfare facilities, site security, all of the liabilities that you will incur the day construction work starts. That all has to be considered. And most important thing, I suppose, is just to have synergy and have, if you can manage to have a good relationship between the person that does the groundwork and the builder. And sometimes that can work.
Yeah, and when you manage your own project, obviously there's also you have to manage everything. The deliveries.
You have to manage
everything. Yep. Make sure deliveries are, like, your toilet's not chipped and you have to open every box.
All of that.
Yeah, and waste management. There's a lot.
There's a lot of responsibility. I used the analogy the other day of a squad of bricklayers in on a price on their own. You're away doing your day job and all the ground floor windowsills arrive. And they're all full of blowholes and chipped. Now, a good builder or a clerk of works would immediately, and part of the role of a clerk of works is to check in materials in terms of specification, quality and quantity. Those windowsills are all damaged and chipped. The bricklayer is in on a price. He doesn't care. He'll throw those sills in. And you'll arrive down on Saturday and we're maybe 6 quarters of block past the sills. And you've got a house, but you've got your new home, which you've thought and dreamt about for years, and all the external sills are chipped. And you tackle the bricklayer about it and they say, well, it's not my problem, I'm not here to do that. Those are the sorts of things that people don't see that a principal contractor should be taking care of.
Thanks, Pete.
Thank you.
Join us next time for more tips and advice from self-builders and experts alike. And if you haven't already, subscribe to Self-Build Plus. It'll give you full access to the selfbuild.ie website, including the Build Cost Hub, the House Plans Library, the Self-Build Journey, and much, much more. Go to selfbuild.ie to get the full details.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra.
and UnitedHealthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.